Chapter 5. Horns.
"Are they men?"
the Baron asked, squinting at the armoured strangers passing through his city gates.
"They do not look like men. They are monstrous."
He stood at the tower window, its lights doused, cleaving to the shadows. He lingered a few steps back from the south-facing sill, unwilling to be seen by the giants, though he could have sworn one of them looked right at him. The giant had an eye patch with a face like a weathered cliff. Privately, he wondered if they were golems, with skin of stone instead of flesh.
"I believe they are men, my liege," said the vizier,
standing off to one side and just behind his lord.
"And this blue livery they wear," the Baron went on, seemingly ignoring the vizier's reply. "Have you seen its like before?" "I do not recognize the sigil. What is it supposed to be? A horseshoe?"
"Scarfell's riders reported they referred to themselves as knights, so that could be the case."
"Then where are their horses, vizier?"
He frowned, and stepped back a pace from the window.
"I do not like this, not at all."
"They claim to be our allies."
"Well, we have sore need of those."
"Indeed, my liege."
The Baron turned from the window, one hand on the pommel of a sword that he wore on his left hip. It was largely ceremonial, and he couldn't remember the last time he needed to draw the weapon.
"Cloister them where they can do no harm," he said, "and have a guard placed."
"Prudent thinking, my liege. I shall do so at once."
The vizier bowed. He was a large man, and his long robes pulled out across the floor.
"This Macrag," said the Baron as he was leaving, "have you ever heard of it?"
The vizier gazed through the windows, though his eyes gave nothing away of his thoughts.
"I have not, my liege, but I am not so well travelled as some."
Vedea slept fitfully, both too cold and too warm at the same time. A chill breeze had entered the hall through some cranny or crack, and despite the furred blankets they had been given, she could not find a way to balance her temperature. Exhaustion had put her down in the end, as her body surrendered to the rigours of the past hours. She had not been the only one to succumb to fatigue and pain. Pilliam had collapsed the moment they passed through the gates. He was taken without escort, despite Vandius's initial protests. She tossed and turned at the memory of trying to prevent any bloodshed, as the Ultramarines looked to defend their own. The Medicus had stepped in, a young woman, slight but with a serious bearing. Vedea had looked at her once. Her presence helped diffuse a volatile situation, and after a few tense moments, the remaining Ultramarines stood down at Sicarius's unspoken order. They parted ways with Pilliam, who was led away on the back of a mule cart, whilst the others were brought through narrow streets crammed with bent-back hovels to a large gated hall, away from the heart of the city. Here, they were told to wait until the Lord of Faradim was ready to grant audience. Shuffling through the gate, Rhida on one arm supporting her, Vedea had gratefully sunk down by a fire pit towards the middle of the room, which was long, with a vaulted roof, though it appeared not to have seen use for some time. The fire pit glowed, recently lit, but was already dwindling. Rhida and Geraint had found wood, and stoked it until a decent flame rippled into being, and then crouched by it with Vedea to warm their weary bodies. They had been given a little food, and she ate it hungrily, as did her companions. She remembered little more after that, but other, older memories rose unbidden in her mind, of the horror she had left aboard the Emperor's will. She imagined a dark room, reminiscent of the Reclusium. Her books were burning, and, as the faces of the dead crowded in on her, the faces of other inhuman things joined them, turned into them. The last one had looked like Ulvo Sharna, before her features distended, her skin thickening and reddening as a pair of ribbed horns uncoiled from her grotesquely misshapen skull, and her eyes turned black. She lunged, now the beast and no longer Sharna, and a giant dark maw ringed with canine fangs reached out, ever hungry. Vedea screamed and awoke.
Damp with feverish sweat, she threw off the furred blanket, shivering instantly in the cold. The fire pit had died to a few scattered embers. Her mortal companions were wrapped in each other's arms. Rita wore her nightmarish dreams openly, in the frown on her face, but Geraint looked inhumanly placid, like the sleeping dead. It worried Vedea. To be like that, after what they had all endured, it was disturbing. She glanced at the Space Marines, but found no reassurance there. They did not sleep. They did not eat. They sat or stood, alert and nursing their thoughts in the quiet darkness. She turned away, reaching for the furred blanket again now she was cold. No, she thought, her eyes growing heavy. They never sleep. They hadn't really slept for over 5 years. Ayla sat down on one of the stout benches, arrayed around the hall, the wood creaking ominously as it took his weight.
"I have had warmer welcomes," he said.
Scipio sat on the opposite bench and had just finished sharpening his gladius.
"They are afraid of us," he said, sheathing the sword.
Praxor's old blade, now deactivated, sat in a scabbard on his back.
"They are foolish if they think this place will hold us."
"If it keeps them feeling safer and us from having to fight our way out of here..."
Aeolus nodded. He gestured to the sleeping mortals, huddled close to one another.
"Much longer, and they would have perished," he said.
Scipio's gaze wandered to the metal sconce above, hanging by a rusted chain, its candle holders empty but tarnished by dusty old wax.
"Is this everything?" asked Aeolus.
On a low table in front of them was a small cache of grenades, all that the Space Marines had brought with them from the ship. It didn't amount to much, and had needed to be carefully smuggled into the city so as not to alarm the natives. 7 fragmentation grenades in all, and a small reel of detcord. This last item had come from the gunship. It wasn't equipment ordinarily used by the Adeptus Astartes, but this mission had ceased being ordinary as soon as they made planetfall.
"No bolt weapons, and certainly nothing more exotic. No chain blades either," said Aeolus.
Scipio brandished his recently sharpened blade.
"Only gladii, combat blades and non-active power swords, with the exception of Sicarius' artificer weapon, of course."
The Tempest Blade had been forged by master artisans. It alone had resisted the effects of the warp siphon.
"Not much of an inventory,"
Aeolus observed.
"It will serve," Scipio replied. "How is your arm?"
The dimming firelight cast by the pit filled Aeolus's face with deep shadows. He looked gaunt, weary.
"Barely functional."
Scipio had noticed he kept the arm close to his body, as if it were wrapped in an invisible sling. His armoured greaves and shoulder pad hid the bionic well enough, but the pain of it was evident in Aeolus's haggard expression. None of the Adeptus Astartes had slept for weeks. Even the rejuvenating effects of catalepsy and meditation had been denied them. Fatigue was not something a space marine readily succumbed to, but nor were they immune to it. The warp siphon had bled more than the ship and their armoury, it seemed. Scipio surveyed the room. Vandia stood by the only door, his blade drawn and stabbed tip down into the earth, both hands upon the pommel like one of the Emperor's champions. The sentinel kept his head up, eyes straight, never wavering for a moment. Though Prabian had been an almost unrivalled swordsman in the chapter, Vandius came a close second. He took all his duties immensely seriously, even for a calling as sober as the Adeptus Astartes. When the standard that had borne the second company's banner had been irrevocably shattered, he had bound the ancient cloth up and carried it on his person wherever he went, lest the need arise to unfurl it again. Quiet agitation seemed to be his default. He looked restive, even in his guard state. Sicarius and Dacius stood off to one side, just at the edge of the firelight, and conversed in low voices. The old veteran appeared to be doing most of the talking. Sicarius, clear-eyed and alert as he listened, nodded and occasionally spoke. They had changed, all of them, since the warp. Not everyone wore full armour. Bandius had lost his left arm greave, damaged beyond repair, as the ship broke warp and the denizens of hell descended. Scipio had only one shoulder guard. The right side split during that same battle. None wore their helms. This was at Vedea's insistence. The mortal chronicler, apparently some kind of authority on ancient cultures. She believed that the people of these lands needed to see the Adeptus Astartes as human, or something close to it, or they would be shunned as enemies. Scipio had no doubt that he and his brothers could overcome every warrior in Faradom, but no ultramarine would countenance such a slaughter, and it would not get them any closer to finding the power source Hephaestus had revealed during the Augur sweep.
"They have locked us in," he said, his gaze straying to the gate.
Iolas laughed mirthlessly.
"I doubt that. Bandius could split that door apart with one blow."
"Best that he does not."
"Aye. We are to play as ambassadors from a foreign land for now."
"It fits us poorly," said Scipio.
Iolas could hardly disagree with that, and nodded. He was about to say more when the gate was unlocked and opened. The ultramarines turned as one, and the warrior in dark padded armour who entered stopped short when faced with the indomitable figure of Vandius.
"You are summoned,"
stammered a warrior, a squire of some sort, and entirely too young for the blade he wore at his hip. A child carrying a man's sword.
"By the Baron."
Through the narrow gap in the gate, Scipio could see several other footmen, some with crossbows, others holding spears, and beyond them the brazier light of the city streets. Night had fallen quickly. Dacius took a step forwards, but the young squire held out a gloved hand.
"Just him!"
He pointed a shaky finger at Sicarius. Dacius bristled.
"Absolutely not!"
Vandius took one hand off the pommel of his sword. Even Iolas began to rise from his bench until Scipio laid a hand upon his shoulder.
"Ambassadors, remember?"
he said in a low voice. Sicarius stood his lions down. "It's all right," he said, looking the squire in the eye, though the man could barely meet his gaze.
"I am sure the Baron means me no harm. Is that not right?"
The squire nodded vigorously. His face had begun to bead with sweat.
"The rest have to stay here,"
he said, regaining some of his dwindling courage.
"Baron's order."
Sicarius shared a look with Vedea, who had stood up from her place by the fire. She nodded, pale but visibly relieved.
"They will remain," said Sicarius.
He turned back to the squire. "I assume you are to escort me?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Then to your duty."
"Now we'll see,"
Scipio said to Iolas, as Sicarius was about to leave.
"See what?"
"How well we can play the role."
Sicarius would never be afforded the chance, as a long horn blast rang out before he had set one foot outside of the feast hall.
"What is that?"
Sicarius asked.
"Never you mind,"
said the squire, drawing his sword, suddenly more fearful of whatever was happening outside the hall than who was inside it.
"You must stay here while I find out what's going on,"
he said, brandishing the blade at Sicarius. Vandius looked poised to dispatch the squire there and then.
"Are you going to use that boy?"
growled Dacius, fists clenched. He took a half step closer. Again, Sicarius stood the lions down.
"He has no need to, Retius, for we will do as he asks."
The horn skirled out again, a long, discordant note, then another. The squire backed out, the door shutting behind him, the locks and bars sliding into place.
"That's a call to arms,"
said Vandius, as soon as the squire was gone, whipping his sword into an upright position.
"He's right,"
Dacius agreed, gladius drawn. Scipio got to his feet a few seconds before Iolas, and the five Adeptus Astartes converged around Sicarius.
"What's happening?"
asked Vedea, joining them. Rita had fallen asleep on Geraint's shoulder, but stirred with the sudden commotion, wide-eyed and alert.
"A fight, most likely," said Sicarius.
"Between whom?"
"Faradom and one of its enemies,"
he he replied. "The bone swine we heard talk of."
"Are we fighting too?"
"It depends."
"On what?"
"If whatever it is steps beyond this threshold." Iolas came forward.
"We cannot leave these people to die, Captain."
Vidaea stepped in.
"You cannot defy the rule of law here."
"I adhere to the imperial law and am sworn to defend mankind," replied Iolas, turning on the chronicler.
"Please, if you leave now and draw swords, you might end up making it worse. You must wait."
She looked to Sicarius for support. "I don't like this, Vidaea," he said.
"But you do agree with me, don't you?"
Scipio could see that Sicarius did, but felt the same frustration they all must be experiencing.
"What about Pilium?"
he asked.
"He's alone, and possibly still unconscious. We can't just leave him to fend for himself."
"I don't disagree, but we have no idea where he was taken."
Decius cut in.
"And even if we did,"
he looked at Vidaea, ever the counsellor for non-violence,
"none of us can step beyond these gates unseen."
Sicarius scowled.
"We cannot leave him unprotected."
"I am sorry, Vidaea." Vidaea was about to protest when Rita spoke up.
"Then let us do it."
She was standing by the fire, her arms by her side.
"Vanko and I," she said.
The other armsman stood too, his gaze cold and determined.
"We can slip through the streets unnoticed. It's narrow, tight, and with plenty of places to hide. No different to a starship, sire."
Sicarius took a moment to weigh up Rita's proposal. Then he nodded to Vandius, who swept out his sword. One blow, north to south, straight down the narrow slit between the two halves of the gate. As he stepped back, the dull thud of the wooden bar and the clang of the bolt could be heard as they struck the ground. The guards had already gone, the horn blast summoning them to whatever crisis was unfolding across Faradim. Vandius edged one half of the door open with the tip of his sword, and Sicarius nodded to an aperture small enough for Rita and Geraint to slip through.
"Find him!"